Take item 1036, please.
Declare intent to pilot the community-initiated neighborhood trails process to allow community organizations to identify and improve undeveloped right-of-ways to trail standards.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, we're today considering a resolution that would pilot a process in which individuals and organizations can work with their neighbors to develop and designate a formally recognized trail. Before staff launches into the history, outreach, resources, and elements of this process, I want to acknowledge the thoughtful feedback the community has offered the Bureau and Council offices. Thank you for your ongoing advocacy. It's my sincerest hope the community continues to be engaged in this pilot process because we'll all be here again in a year after the process goes live. This, again, is a pilot process. PBOT is not the only Bureau looking forward to what kind of information, new methods, and partnerships can come out of this process. I want to particularly acknowledge Sarah Schooley for her hard work, patience, and desire to craft a pilot policy that balances the diverse desires and needs of the community and the various city bureaus. She's the only person at PBOT who works solely on pedestrian, ADA, and trails policies. Her dedication to this project and its stakeholders is admirable. I want to thank Erica Niebel of my staff, who's worked long and hard on this issue, along with many others. And I'd really like to thank Kirk Kruger for showing up today, even though he's sick. We don't normally approve of people showing up to work sick, but in this case, we appreciate it and hope he goes home right afterwards. I'd be amiss if I didn't also thank staff from the various other bureaus that Sarah worked with to craft this pilot process. It's important to note that while this pilot originated under PBOT, the resolution strives to streamline this process for other bureaus as well. This has been a collaborative process. Before I turn it over to Sarah, I also want to say that it's a great thing when a community organization steps forward and says that they want to maintain a trail and we should announce to the community, put it up on our maps and announce to the community, this is a trail we want you to go to and there's good people maintaining it. So some people might ask, why do we need a process at all? If a community group comes forward and says, we want to maintain a trail, why don't we just say, go to it? Well, the truth is that I've learned over the past few years that people feel a real sense of ownership to the right-of-way, over the right-of-way near them. I'm still getting complaints from people who say, you build a sidewalk on my side of the street in Hillsdale, and I didn't walk that sidewalk, and I didn't think that there was sufficient public outreach. Although, of course, there was public outreach, but they didn't think it was sufficient. So we need to have some outreach to people in the neighborhood of a new proposed trail before we, like, put it on a map and say, here's the people who are going to be running it. And we, frankly, don't have much capacity within PBOT to do a lot of outreach. One of the things that we're asking for in this pilot process is to ask people who are proposing to paint a trail to contact people in the immediate neighborhood. And they'll actually have a big selling point for the people who are joining landowners, which is if the community group takes over maintenance, agrees to take over maintenance, that relieves the adjoining property owners of some maintenance responsibilities. So we think that community groups that engage in this process should find a lot of support from the people we're asking them to engage with. But we do need to have some sort of outreach process. Now, without further ado, I'll turn it over to Sarah.
And I'm actually going to first turn it over to Art.
Hello. Actually, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I forgot. I was supposed to first propose a couple of amendments to Exhibit A. And it's if you look at Exhibit A under Step 4, which is on page 7, currently it says any proposed trail must at a minimum meet existing City of Portland Trail Type B standards. We'd like to replace standards with guidelines.
Can you tell me exactly where?
It's
on the top.
It's right at the top.
First line.
Sorry,
yeah.
First line. And then on the next page under Step 6, the second paragraph, which starts with the trails organization, shall contact PBOT once construction is complete. Want to replace the next language with so staff with a representative, parentheses S of the applicant, have an opportunity. So cross out the words to allow staff.
Second.
Okay. Got those amendments on the table. Any questions about those? Roll call to accept those amendments and then proceed.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, thank you. All right. Anything else, Commissioner, before the staff takes it away?
Nope.
All right. Please do.
All right. So I'm Art Pierce. I manage policy planning and projects for the Transportation Bureau. Sarah works for me, and so I'm here to give just a quick introduction, in no small part because Sarah took on pretty commendable leadership and initiative to take on something that has been an ongoing and very dynamic conversation for many, many years, and tried to bring to it a rational approach, in no small part to try to bring this conversation to a transparent and sort of logical place, rather than one that needs to come to City Council for every arbitration. So this process was called for in the Southwest Trails Plan in 2000, so it's taken us 15 years to get this before you, but we're following through on a commitment at that time when we designated the most important trails within the Southwest area. And it's very important in terms of us balancing the needs of the public right-of-way with the safety of the traveling public. It is a compromise. This is a proposal that will give a sort of logical, transparent way for both trails advocates and property owners to understand how to navigate this balancing act between their needs. It's also important, as the commissioner stressed, this is a pilot project. This is a test of laying out this new rational process. It is one that we will be tracking its progress and coming back and reporting on it to make tweaks to make the process work more effective over time. And lastly, even though you'll hear today that the most interest in this process really lies in Southwest Portland, it is not applicable only to Southwest Portland. There's interest from inner Southeast, North Portland, and outer East Portland in using this process to move their trail projects forward. And certainly, if we are able to demonstrate the efficacy of this process, it's one that I'm committed to trying to follow on with funding to help make it more effective over time once we've demonstrated that this process is effective and can work to deliver trails. So I think I'll pass it on to Sarah, who's going to go a lot deeper into the background and details, and then we're here and Kurt's here to answer more questions as we go into the conversation.
Thank you, Art. Good morning, Mayor and Council. So once again, my name is Sarah Schooley. I'm the Pedestrian Coordinator and ADA Coordinator for the Bureau of Transportation, and had the, I guess you could call it, honor of being 15 years late to this process and 15 years after when we first said we were going to put together a neighborhood and community-initiated trails process. So before we jump in, I just want to reemphasize a couple points that Commissioner Novick and both Art said, that really this is a pilot process. And so we're really looking at this as a chance to learn about what works and what doesn't. We've been having theoretical conversations about what might work and what doesn't for about 15 years, and there's been a lot of conversation on all sides of the issue. And so we're really looking to get something in place so we can start evaluating a real thing and start having conversations about what works and what doesn't. So on that note, I want to start off with really defining what we are talking about and what we aren't talking about. I think this is a very, very important kind of framing of the issue as we move forward. And as I'm sure a lot of you know, the discussion of what happens in the public right-of-way is no small discussion, that there's a lot of moving pieces. And so this is just one of those pieces that I think can help out some of those other pieces, but isn't going to be the complete answer to all of those questions that come in your doors. So the first point, just a reemphasis that this is a pilot process. PBOT does not have any process right now for allowing community groups to build new trails. And so as a result, no new trails have been built for years on PBOT right-of-way because there is no process. And so we're looking to put in something so that community groups can start really focusing their energy and harnessing their skills to help us build out the system. So once again, this is how to build new trails that we're talking about. And we're also talking about a way to transfer the liability and maintenance responsibility of existing unpermitted trails from adjacent property owners to a trail building organization, or as I'll be referring to them as the applicants for this process. So what we're not talking about is kind of broader encroachment policies. Once again, a big issue, lots of folks involved, both community members and various bureaus. And so this is just a small piece of encroachment policies, and I think can be a tool to help the conversation move along in some other pieces, but is not going to answer all the questions. What we're also not talking about is funding nonprofits to main trails. This might be a conversation further down the line, but this, as I mentioned before, is a first step. And then the other thing that we're not talking about is a specific trail or specific right-of-way. I think a lot of folks that have contributed to the conversation, of course, bring their knowledge of what's going on near their backyards or front yards to the conversation. But we're really looking to create a process that would work for many rights-of-way throughout the city. So just want to make sure that we know what we are talking about and what we aren't talking about as we move forward. So Art mentioned a little bit of this, how did we get here? So there's two main things that brought us to this point of putting together a pilot process. The first is that Southwest Urban Trails Plan, which was approved by council in 2000. And there's this line in here that's really the nexus for why we're putting this process together. So the line states, residents and adjacent property owners need to be notified about the proposed improvements and should be supportive. Opposition to the improvements could require a more formal public process requiring city staff participation. So that more formal public process has never been developed. And so that's what we're looking to fill in here. And then the second big step that's happened since 2000 is ORS 105.668 that was adopted by the state legislature in 2011. And legally, it's called immunity from liability or injury or property damage arising from use of trail or structures in public easement or right-of-way. More casually, it's known as recreational immunity. And so what this means is that if you are on a trail, that the property owner isn't liable if you fall and twist your ankle or kind of for your use on that trail. And a big step in this process is making things official trails so that we can start using that law and start transferring that liability away from the property owners. And so a trail system is now kind of held on the users, most of our recreational system is, instead of those adjacent property owners. So these are the two things that really helped us get to the need for the process that I'll be talking about today. So as Art mentioned, and also Commissioner Novick mentioned, we had quite an extensive public outreach process for this. And just a side note, this whole pilot process actually could have been done as an admin rule. And so we realized that this issue was kind of bigger than an admin rule, even though it could have fallen under that category, and really went out and did public involvement like it was a bigger project. So we worked really hard to try to engage a wide range of opinions, wide range of stakeholders. And the process started actually about last year, in November 2014, when I worked with staff from various bureaus, including BES, BDS, ONI, and especially Portland Parks and Recreation, to put together the first draft of the trails process. Between November and February, we had our first comment period. And this period was fairly targeted outreach with folks that had expressed interest in this sort of issue before. So I met with the Pedestrian Advisory Committee, with Sweeney. We had the lead article in Southwest News in December. I went to and presented at the Southwest Trails meeting. And in addition to target some of our harder-to-reach populations, we went out through our Safe Routes to School network and sent out information through there. I worked with the advice of Sylvia from Sweeney. She suggested that I work with the libraries in Southwest Portland to reach more of the non-English-speaking populations and those that might not necessarily be reading Southwest News. And then lastly, also contacted the property manager at Stevens Creek Crossing Housing Development out there because they are potentially going to be connected by a trail in the upcoming future. So just wanted to make sure that they were aware of the process and were hopefully getting a connection between the city and city staff that maybe they were more comfortable with or trusted a little bit more than, you know, the monstrous Portland Bureau of Transportation. So really looking to make that connection. So from that first public outreach period, we had about 3,000 website views and 175 comments. So not too shabby, I would say, for a topic such as this. In March 2015, staff took all those comments back, incorporated them, and then in April 2015, we re-released an updated draft and sent out over 8,000 mailers to folks across the city, re-contacted the same groups that we did the first time around, and then also talked with more neighborhood coalitions and neighborhood associations. It's important to note that it was about 8,500 mailers that went out to property owners and residents among the unimproved right-of-ways. So these included people that actually owned the homes there and folks that were renting them. It also included quite a few multifamily housing units and businesses. So just kind of whoever was living along them, whoever might really directly kind of adjacent-wise be impacted, we contacted directly. From this outreach period, we got almost 5,000 website views and 150 more comments. So also, I think, pretty impressive. We were going to come to you in June. That got delayed because the neighborhood associations, especially Sweeney and also Southwest Trails, wanted additional time over the summer to kind of check back in with their neighborhood associations per some changes that had been made in the drafts. And so thus we are here today. And with that, I'll go over just a couple of the quick comment themes that we've gotten during these outreach periods. During that first period, we heard a lot about how we decide which rights of way should be eligible for the process, liability and maintenance concerns, the cost to PBOT with resources and staff, the balance between environmental degradation and improving access, what the approval process should be, design, and just overall promotion of trails. From that second comment period, we had two main themes. One was removing one of the community outreach options, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then the next theme was what we should do with existing trails. So those were the two from the second one. So pretty wide range of comments, and also a lot of people that were involved in this process. So with that, I'm going to quickly go over the process. I think, and I hope you agree, that it's actually a pretty simple process. And to encourage you to think that way, I would like you to go to one of your handouts that's called the checklist. So you should all have it in your packet. And it goes kind of step by step through what the applicant would need to submit. And so everybody also has this kind of larger text, more text-heavy document, and this goes into why we're asking for what we're asking. But as far as what the applicant would be looking at, we're really thinking that that checklist is going to be the main communication tool. So the first step is an internal check. So as I said before, we worked very collaboratively with a number of bureaus in putting this process together. But And a lot of bureaus, even though it's PBOT right-of-way, either own property adjacent to it or are directly impacted by what happens in that right-of-way. And so the first step, as you can see is in the checklist, is to have the applicant email us, and there's a form letter in there, just saying what right-of-way they're interested in improving. What we'll do from PBOT, we have contacts at all these bureaus, is send that out to these contacts and say, is there any fatal flaw in making this into a trail? One of the questions we get a lot from, or that we've gotten from Portland Parks, is if there's a sensitive natural area around it. Sometimes they're hesitant to be providing access into that area or just want a little bit more say in how that access is provided. And so this is our internal check to make sure that the applicant doesn't get too far down the road, and then we as the city actually have kind of an internal issue to work out before it goes forward. So this step, the work is mostly on the city's end in collaborating between bureaus. The second step is looking for a transportation nexus. As I said, this process will be managed by PBOT, but as Art and Commissioner Novick said, does not necessarily have any additional resources to support the program. And so we want to make sure that before we use some of our prized resources, that we make sure that there is a connection between the work out there and transportation. And so we're asking the applicant to show us through narrative, through a map, through however they want to, that one of these connections is made for this trail between a neighborhood and either transit, places of work, schools, parks and open space, or other services. These are the locations that are identified in the transportation system plan and also the pedestrian master plan as places that we're really highly valuing connections. Another comment at the bottom of the slide was on the advice of the Pedestrian Advisory Committee. They also wanted an option where a trail would allow a connection that is difficult to make due to limited parallel access. So that, I think, really applies to neighborhoods that don't have a full build-out street grid and are really looking for some routes that are safer and provide greater access. So this is just kind of an internal check for PBOT to make sure that our limited resources are being focused on transportation. The third step, I would say, unsurprisingly, is where we got the most feedback, and this appropriately is the public involvement in neighborhood support section. So PBOT, as you probably know, PBOT has the final say about what we do with our right-of-ways. But we believe having community support for a trail is an important piece of this process that we don't want to miss. So PBOT will not be building or maintaining the trails that are proposed in this process. And so as such, we think that it's important for neighbors to trust the applicant, who will be the maintainer of the trail, because they'll also be helping to serve as the eyes of the trail, the ones that are really checking on it and probably using it the most since it's right by their home. That said, there are two avenues for this requirement depending on the current status of the right-of-way. And so there's kind of two choices here. The first one is if that right-of-way is on a council-approved map. So in the pamphlet you have, you all have map 3.1, and that's a map from the Southwest Urban Trails Plan of the adopted proposed urban trails network. And what we're proposing there is that if the trail that the applicant wants is on that map, they don't have to do any community outreach as far as making sure people want it or they're okay with it. All they have to do is notify because it is on a council-approved plan. So that's a pretty easy route to go. If
so
it is not...
That's the dash lines on the map?
So yes, some of the dash lines and the solid lines as well.
Oh, good.
Yep. So the dashed lines are ones where the route hasn't been exactly defined yet, but they do provide a general idea of the connections that the trail is trying to make. So for the second part, we have rights of ways that are not on a council-approved trail map. And so for those, we're looking for a little bit more in that venue of community support. And as an aside, to go back a little bit to those on council-approved maps, right now, really the only ones we're talking about are the ones on map 3.1. But there are a couple of upcoming plans that I think will also contribute to this like broader map network that's council-adopted, one being the Stevens Tryon Creek Watershed Street Plan. There's a lot of words in that plan. I don't know if I put them all in the right order, but I think they're all in there. And the other one that is probably going to be coming up in the next couple of years is the Southwest in Motion Plan. And so both of those will be identifying some trails, and then will get added to this council-approved network.
But I think Division Midway Street Plan, which I believe is even coming this afternoon, includes some additional connections that could apply for this as well.
Yep.
So if it's a council-approved trail or it's on the map, then the adjacent property owners do not have veto power over
approving
that trail.
Exactly. Yep.
And even in the other instances, they don't have veto power. They have a voice in the overall conversation along with their neighbors. Right?
Well, could I just ask a question about that?
Of course.
It does appear for me in the report that they do have veto power.
Okay. And actually, Commissioner Fritz, I'll be talking about that in this next slide.
Okay, good.
So if I can go through it, and then let me know if it's not clear or you have any additional questions. So this next step would be, once again, if the trail or if the right-of-way is not on a map as an approved trail. And it's important to note, as I think Commissioner Fritz brought up, that PBOT really has the final say in whether we allow a trail to go forward or not. And so we're really looking for this process, given the kind of complete absence of resources for staff, for the community group to show us that the neighborhood wants it instead of PBOT pushing it through, coming from staff. And so even if this decision doesn't turn out as somebody would like, I mean, PBOT could also reverse it if we needed to. This is considered an advisory step, as is really the rest of the process. It's all advising PBOT on how to move forward with the right-of-way. So we put forward these three options for applicants to use when proposing an unimproved right-of-way to become a trail. And we put together these three options in order for them to kind of choose which one is the easiest for them to achieve. And so the first option we give them is to be able to get 75% of adjacent neighbors to sign a petition in support of the trail. So if they can get that, they can breeze right through that step. For option two, we're looking for at least 50% of households within a quarter mile, thinking that most of these trails are pretty small connections, and those within a quarter mile will be the most likely users of those connections. And so we're looking for a lower percentage, but kind of broader support. So even if the neighbors adjacent to the trail aren't directly supportive of it, I think this option shows us that there is a demand from the broader neighborhood. And then the third option is to be honest, a compromise option from the comments that we've heard over the two comment periods. So we're asking for 50% of the adjacent neighbors and an approved letter of support from the neighborhood association. Just to give you some background, this third option was present in the first draft, or in the second draft of the document that went out. And then in that second comment period, we heard a lot of feedback that folks didn't feel that the neighborhood association was representative of their concerns. Either, you know, maybe because they didn't participate in the neighborhood association because they couldn't make that evening meeting, or they just didn't feel like it was completely representative. So they wanted to have some balance between that neighborhood association and the folks that they felt maybe were more impacted by the trail because it went right by their house. So we took that option out. When we took the neighborhood association option out, unsurprisingly, we got a lot of comments saying, hey, where did the neighborhood association option go? We want to see that again. And so we put in option three as an attempt to balance the desires that we got from the public of lowering the percentage of adjacent neighbors that we needed, but then offering also that involvement from the neighborhood association.
And again, this slide you're showing us applies only to new trails.
Correct.
That are not on the city-approved map.
Yes, and so okay. These are only for proposed trails that are not on council-approved maps. And I think that's a really important distinction to make, because these are the trails that have not gone through any public process thus far, or haven't been approved in any public process thus far. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Fritz?
It begins to address the concern. It still shows that with the neighborhood association approval option, you still need 50% of the adjacent property owners. In the example Commissioner Novick brought up at the beginning about the sidewalk in Hillsdale, we don't require adjacent 50% of adjacent property owners to be in support of a sidewalk. We say it's needed. And I certainly appreciate that the burden of the outreach should be on the group wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At the last paragraph of the report states, we also hope that if a trail is not approved through this process, that the applying trails organization will respect the voices that denied the trail's development, whether those voices come from PBOT, the adjacent property owners, or the neighborhood. If a trail is not accepted for improvement, we would hope the trails organization would not advertise the unimproved right-of-way as a trail and not encourage large-scale use of the area. Instead, we would encourage the trails organization to look for another valuable connection that would improve transportation options that have broader neighborhood support. And that's the end of the report. It doesn't go on to say, however, despite the above paragraph, if the proposed trail has broad support in the community beyond the quarter mile, because in Southwest in particular, we have regular walks that go miles and miles through neighborhoods, and there might be a new connection that wasn't in the Southwest Trails Plan, for example. It should say at the end, the commissioner in charge of PBOT may decide to allow the trail to be built.
Yes.
Otherwise, so could we add that?
That could definitely be added. Mm-hmm. Yes, and just to make a little distinction between the example you brought up of the sidewalk and kind of, you know, that we didn't need neighborhood support for that. I think an important difference between something like a trail and something like a sidewalk is when we're building a sidewalk, we're building it up to PBOT standards, and PBOT's responsible for that construction. And so we know that if we're going in to build it, we're building it up to ADA standards, we're building it up to kind of this set of standards that have been adopted by the city as a pedestrian accepted pedestrian infrastructure. And with trails, there's a bit more trust involved in, you know, that it's a community organization that's building the trail and maintaining it. And so we want to make sure that that conversation is happening. But to your point of putting in a line saying that the PBOT commissioner has the final say, we can definitely do that and make that a broader point in the document.
I think the one other point, important point about a sidewalk is that it is included in our plans, so that sidewalk connection is something that we went through a public process and prioritized even at the transportation system plan level. And so we have gone through a public process and have gone to City Council to get endorsement that that's an important priority.
Right.
And so similarly, any trail that has gone through some similar process like that is able to go right through. Right.
Public rights of way, though, are public rights of way. I don't get to decide who parks in front of my house.
No.
Everybody has the opportunity to do that. So if we could accept a friendly amendment to add something to say that notwithstanding the above, the commissioner in charge of PBOT may decide to allow the trail to be built.
Certainly. I mean, the way I look at this is we're telling people, if you're able to go through this process successfully, you can expect that your trail will be approved. you don't have to go through this process, but if you're not using this process and come to us to ask for approval of a trail, you need to understand that we'll be limited by our own ability to do outreach and determine community support.
Right. I think the clear intent is you have to go through this, but the charter ascribes the council that is the authority to make decisions, not one or two adjacent property owners. So mm-hmm. would you be willing to accept that as a friendly amendment?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Frith. Okay, so step four talks about design guidelines, and it looks at the trail building guidelines that we're looking at. We've proposed guidelines from the city's resident trail building expert, Portland Parks and Recreation. We didn't see any need to come up with our own, since Portland Parks knows how to do this way better than we do. And so we selected trail type B. And so trail type B, I don't know how familiar you are with their different trail standards. They go through A and D. A is considered a high challenge trail, and C and D are considered more accessible trails. We were trying to find a medium ground where people could use it to get to the bus stop and then go to work and not look like they just went on a morning hike. And so we're trying to find that middle ground here. And we'll continue to work and communicate with Portland Parks and Recreation about meeting these standards. We're still in conversations with them about either learning from their inspectors or their, you know, approvers of trails to make sure that we're getting it right. And this will be something that we'll be looking at over the year. But I think this is actually one of the easier steps for us as PBOT, because we already have guidelines put together and we already have expertise in the city on this category. And then the last step is permitting and review. And so, as many of you know, having the appropriate permits in line for a project is essential to ensure that liability and responsibility is covered, and that any structures are safe and the environment is protected. These that are up on the screen, the encroachment permit, building permit, and environmental review and permitting, are the three we think most likely categories that would be touched by a trail. So the first is an encroachment permit, and so this is basically just a permit to say something's happening in the right-of-way, and this is issued by PBOT. All trails would need this permit, and the Bureau of PBOT has said that we would offer to waive the fees for this permit for groups that go through this process. So most trails would only need this encroachment permit, so there would be no permit fees associated. The second permit that may be needed would be a building permit, and so this would depend on if and what sort of structures would be on the trail. We would be working with the Bureau of Development Services for this permit. While I know a lot of community groups wished, and sometimes we wished as well, that we could just get our BDS permits fees waived, we cannot and don't have really much control over that conversation. And so we also in the document put that it is up to the Bureau that requires the permit how they want to deal with fees as they go through this process. And then the last thing that we could see some trails running into is environmental review and permitting. As you might expect, many of the desired trails run through some of the most beautiful areas of the city and also some of the most environmentally sensitive parts of the city. And so environmental review and permitting is just a requirement of city code, also issued by BDS. But one important thing to note is, while you can imagine many of these trails go up and down slopes and maybe would go through some pretty sensitive environmental areas, in city code we do have trail exemptions for going through environmental areas. And so they're in more detail in the larger process. You can see them on page 7. There are 5 of them, and they just look at kind of what a trail would have to look like and what would they meet. And if they met those requirements, then they wouldn't have to go through environmental permitting.
So let me ask, if I could, a question on that. And let's take the interest that the Bureau of Environmental Services may have in this process. So I can imagine that those interests could be many, but let's take 3 examples. A trail that goes through a natural area.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's questions about how to place the trail, and is there a preferred route, an alternative route? How do we have to put a bridge in to get over a natural area or a stream or something? So that's one example. Number 2 is the Bureau of Environmental Services may be interested in the impact of a trail on stormwater runoff. How does it impact somehow the existing systems? And number 3 the Bureau of Environmental Services may have actually a dog in the fight. They may determine that that trail has other benefits to the system that they exclusively are responsible for, so they may end up being a funder in partnership with others to fund that trail. So where in this process does BES assert or protect its interest through this process?
So that's actually in the first step. And so that first step where we put out, hey, this is the right-of-way that we're looking at, we will be sending that notification to BES. And so Jennifer Devlin is our contact at BES that we would be sending that to. And so from knowing where that right-of-way is, they can decide if there are any issues that come up or if there's any opportunities that come up through that.
And so and then at the back end in step five, what is BES's role as you have established this in terms of the environmental review and permitting?
So in the environmental review and permitting, even though BDS issues the permit, BES is the advisor for the permit. And so they're in the room advising BDS on what sort of permit to issue, what other things might be added to the permit, or just kind of how to do it in general. And so a great example that's actually kind of happening right now is there's a trail that was funded through the Mayor's Bump last year that will be connecting to Robert Gray Middle School. And looking at that trail, we worked with BES to tweak the route a little bit of that trail in order to avoid some really expensive permitting. And so BES was able to use that expertise and say, hey, if you're 10 feet over, we're safe because you're not by the water that we don't want you to be by. It's a better opportunity, and it makes more sense for our system. There's also the conversation of, you know, if by going into an area that opens opportunities for replanting or some other stormwater protection and watershed protection that you manage. And so BES is very involved in the environmental review and permitting, even though the final document comes from BDS.
And I'm glad you made that last point, because BES sees itself as a full partner in this process. And you gave an example of where early engagement led to a less expensive alternative. Yeah. And again, there's always the potential nexus between the mission of BES and the trail where there potentially is funding. I'm looking at Don because, of course, it's a case-by-case situation. But the earlier consultation and discussion might actually reduce costs as well as open up potential funding sources. That's why it's, I think, so important.
Exactly. Thank you. So that's our process. Five, hopefully, fairly easy steps. We have that internal check, checking on pedestrian connectivity, looking for neighborhood involvement and support, or simply notification if the trail is already on a council-approved map, that design check, and then the last step is permitting. And just to note, that permitting step is really what puts that recreational immunity into place. So that's what makes this an official trail on the books. And so that step is what takes us over the edge into the next territory. As I mentioned before, for our community outreach that we did, I went to the Pedestrian Advisory Committee twice to talk about this project. And the second time I went, we talked actually mostly about the pilot project evaluation and what questions we should be asking ourselves as we go through this process and to improve it in the future. The three that really came to the top from their point of view was how many times does the process get started versus how many times does it get finished? And that kind of leads to actually the third question on this slide, thinking about where are the hiccups in the process? Where are the parts that are really hard to get through? And so we can learn from where those hiccups are and try to make them easier while still meeting the needs of the Bureau of Transportation or other bureaus or the law or whatever else we have to think about when going through this. That middle question was also something brought up by the Pedestrian Advisory Committee, thinking about how much staff time and resources does the process take. And we, there are a couple folks within the Bureau that will be working together to deliver this process, both from the permitting group and then myself as the pedestrian coordinator and my fellow staff. And so thinking about how many resources from what groups so we can make sure that this is an efficient use of our time, since some may argue that it's a little outside of our realm of kind of Vision Zero safety projects, we want to make sure that it does do what it needs to do while letting the limited number of staff also focus on their other work. And for project pilot project evaluation. I know that there was some discussion within within the council members about putting together an evaluation committee. There is a little hesitance from myself and my workload to think about running another committee, but luckily I already staff one. And so I staff the pedestrian advisory committee, and I think that they would they could serve as this evaluation committee, coming back to them at 6 months with where it is, and then a year later. They have been involved in commenting on it, and I think are an appropriate and also existing committee that we could be tapping into to be more efficient. So lastly, as I mentioned at the beginning, this trails process is this little piece of a lot of bigger stories. And so these are a couple of kind of those bigger stories that I think this process may help. So the first is encroachment. So I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have gotten phone calls to your office about some random encroachment in a right-of-way somewhere around the city. And while this process doesn't answer all those questions, what it does do is it will put more trails that the community wants to use on the map if they go through this process. And so what that means is that if there is an encroachment in the right-of-way, whether it's permitted or not permitted, once we have a trail that goes through this process that's there, we can ask for those encroachments to be removed. We have some teeth to do that.
Why don't you have teeth to do that now?
Just because there are so many around the city. And I can have Kurt Kruger talk a little bit to that after I get through this, since his group is really the ones that makes the decisions on this and runs that process.
Commissioner, I mean, this might be helpful. There's a relevant portion of the code that says, quote, all alleys, unimproved streets, and other public ROW must be clear of obstructions that may hinder the normal flow of traffic or render the ROW unsafe for its current and necessary use. So I think that that can raise questions about, okay, what is normal, what is the current and necessary use? And if we're designated as a formal trail, then we're sort of, you know, there's a pretty strong case that it's necessary uses for a trail.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, and it's helping define, because there's also kind of a weird and potentially confusing relationship between PBOT and BDS on this, because BDS is our enforcement, really, for these sorts of things. And so they're the ones going out to judge what that current and necessary use is that Commissioner Novick talked about. And so if on a map we say, it is a trail, like it is certainly a trail, we can very easily get either things trimmed back or encroachments removed.
The way BDS operates, though, for a number of code things is by complaints.
Yes.
So I'm concerned that even if there isn't a trail, if there's a huge takings of the public right-of-way, BDS doesn't feel like it has the authority, neither does PBOT, to say, no, you've got to take that fence off.
Exactly. And so we're hoping that this process helps define that authority and helps give us that kind of oomph to say this has to be removed.
But what I'm concerned about is that I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on TV even, but I'm wondering, thank you, Commissioner Fisher, I appreciate the chuckle. My understanding is that after an encroachment has been there for a certain time, it becomes, well, nobody asked me to move it, so it's mine now. So aren't we potentially, by allowing encroachments that are maybe not on trails to continue to be there, are we not de facto giving that property back to the adjacent property owner?
No.
As long as it's still in right-of-way, I don't believe, but that's why we've got all these smart people nodding in the back there. Yeah. As long as it's still in the right-of-way, our authority is unchanged.
We can get rid of the encroachments at any time in the future, and if it's 20 years down the line.
Exactly. And this also helps more on the front end. So if something is designated as a trail and somebody goes through the correct channels and says, I want to build a fence on this right-of-way, can I get a permit? When we go to look, we'll see that it's a trail and be able to right up front say no, and this is the reason why. So it helps protect that public space.
So speaking of people nodding in the back, I want to urge you to finish up soon, because we've got a lot of people here to testify and we got a crowded agenda this morning.
So. You got it. So maintenance, just a quick point that we're currently working in discussions with Portland Parks and Recreation about their community stewardship agreements and thinking about how we can work maybe more similarly to them in encouraging and helping to target maintenance along these rights of ways for existing trails. And then lastly, the neighborhood voice piece. There's been some confusion about what and how neighbors can give their voice to this process, and we feel that what we're proposing does have a pretty defined way for both the applicant and the neighbors to contribute. So lastly, just wanted to give a a quick shout out to our website, which has gotten over 20,000 views over the last year, which I think is pretty impressive. And a couple of the important documents that are on there that are tangentially related to this project, but questions that we knew people wanted answered. So I'd say the two most important ones, the one kind of in front of the slide and the trifold that you all have in front of you, it's called A Path to Trail Safety. And I have to give a lot of credit to Jenny Pullen and Stephanie Kourmetis from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement that helped me pull this together. Actually, they pulled it together. I shouldn't take much credit for it at all. But it talks about how to build trails and also how to be a property owner next to trails and feel better about your safety. So I think it's a good read and has gotten over 1,000 views on the website. The other one that I feel is really helpful is this Unimproved Rights of Ways, What to Do. It's a two-sided document. One is for folks that live adjacent to rights of way, unimproved rights of ways, and the other side is for folks that want to use unimproved rights of ways for walking. And so it just kind of defines what their roles and responsibilities and possibilities are for, you know, working with adjacent property owners to offer, you know, their maintenance services and what just in general responsibilities everybody has. So that's it for the presentation. Just want to reemphasize that this is a pilot that we're going for, and that we want to pilot something because this conversation has been going on for a really long time. So you'll be hearing, I'm sure, a lot of different testimony. You'll be hearing probably a lot of the wide variety that I've heard over the past year. And want you to realize that this process is not going to make anybody 100% happy. But we're looking to find a starting point that makes sense and a starting point that we can work from and evaluate over the next year.
I have a question. And I apologize if this was asked while I was out of the room, just to say so. But so the trails organizations must maintain liability insurance?
No. They wouldn't be maintaining liability.
I think you said that earlier on that they would be liable.
No, so what this process does is it transfers that liability away from the adjacent property owner. So right now, if it's undeveloped, the adjacent property owner is liable. Once it becomes a permit, or once it gets a permit to be a trail, it falls under the recreational immunity law, in which case the liability switches to the user. And so it would become like a trail in a national park. Where you're accepting that responsibility.
So the trail organizations do not have to maintain liability insurance?
Correct.
Okay.
Commissioner Novick,
thank you, sir.
Anything else before we turn to testimony?
I think that Jennifer Devlin from BES was here to offer some additional comments.
Okay, come on up, Jennifer.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Jennifer Devlin. I'm staff from BES Watershed Services Division, and I'm hoping my testimony will answer or address some of the questions that Commissioner Fish brought up and let you know how BES has been working with this process. So BES has been working with PBOT and the community interested in trails for well over a decade. We welcome PBOT's community-initiated neighborhood trails process as it provides guidance for these projects. Encouraging walking in our community has positive watershed health impacts. Pedestrian trails can reduce car miles and thereby reduce the pollutants that wash off into streets and into our local streams. Pedestrian elements can and have been integrated into BES properties as well as our capital, grants, and maintenance projects. Some successful examples of this partnering are, recently BES partnered with the Dharma Rain Zen Center out at Northeast Siskiyou on a pedestrian trail along BES's stormwater facility. This trail now serves members of the Rocky Butte community with an east-west off-street walking trail. A 2006 BES Community Watershed Stewardship Project grant helped protect a wetland at Stevens Creek used to create the Razback Pedestrian Crossing. We're very proud of that project, too. BES recently secured a Metro Capital Grant Award to help create a pedestrian undercrossing for regional trail users along Tryon Creek. This will happen during a culvert replacement project at Southwest Boones Ferry Road that you heard about a couple of weeks ago. while protecting a sewer that was exposed in Johnson Creek at Tideman Johnson Park, BES protected the wetland there by developing a boardwalk for student water quality studies and pedestrians as a loop off the Springwater Trail. As you might know also, that BES has been partnering with PBOT to create walkable shoulders along Southwest streets that don't have sidewalks while we're converting ditches into roadside swales. Along the Columbia Slough, BES has supported grant projects for youth to control erosion by doing trail work and collaborated with PBOT and EPA to build the 47th Avenue Bridge, suitable for passage for storm flows, fish, pedestrians, and paddlers, paddling trail there. In summary, we've collaborated frequently in the past, and BES is interested in continuing to work with PBOT staff and the community in a formal way on trails in undeveloped right-of-ways for a variety of reasons. There are environmental impacts from both trails and trail users that should be considered in the siting of trails. Having a formal community-initiated trails process that would require review of the environmental impacts and work with appropriate city staff is an important part of ensuring that these trails are sustainable, functional, and environmentally responsible. Undeveloped rights-of-ways also have potential for siting stormwater facilities, and in these cases, BES can actually be an active partner in developing projects that meet trails and stormwater needs, such as one that we're working on Southwest 19th. Any sort of development has the potential for being opportunistic, and the collaboration designed into the trails process could allow PBOT and BES to continue to improve our work together. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. All right, let's turn to public testimony, please.
We have 24 people signed up.
Wow, okay, we're gonna ask you to be brief if you possibly can.
The first three, please come on up, are Kenner Swain, Arlene Kimura, and Liz Moratz. And they will be followed by Dave Manville, Don Bach, and John Gould.
Good morning. I think you're first, Arlene.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Hales. Good morning, Commissioners. I want to comment on the proposal, not so much the proposal itself, but how this was done. I feel very uncomfortable with the fact that none of the outreach was done to our non-English speaking members in East Portland. Most of it was focused on Southwest Portland. I'm also a little concerned that there is no equity from having community members continue to do all of the processing as opposed to having paid staff assist us and provide resources. I have no translation dollars. Do I pay it out of my own pocket so that I can get the Karen community who do walk, who do community gardening as part of their culture to help us do this? There are not many community trails in East Portland that connect transit, schools, or whatever. In fact, most of our natural areas, you have to drive to them. If we are, as a community, trying to lower our use of carbon fuels, then we need to provide more of them. And somehow, I don't know that this process is going to help. What I would like to have is a review of this process within 6 to 9 months on an ongoing basis. I would like to see more staff resources put to helping us do the outreach to our non-English-speaking communities, because they all walk as a culture. Most of them walk from place to place, and we don't provide any walking abilities as a health measure for our children. And I went to a trails conference earlier this year. The city of San Jose has an urban trails planner on their staff. What happened to Portland? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning. Who'd like to be next? Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. So,
Put your name in the record, sorry.
Oh, Kenner Swain, recently moved to Portland.
Welcome.
Thank you. I was told it was a place where young people come to retire, but then I got here and it was too late. So I see I'm the same age you are, and I know that pedestrian walking is important just to try to keep things as stable as we can. And so I'm new enough to Portland just a few months that I don't know all the personalities and the 15-year history or the history going back to Benson and Pittock or whatever else, but I did have the strong sense after reading the opinion piece by Mr. Back online that the Portland Bureau of Transportation or Board of Transportation, as Commissioner Fritz, I think, has suggested, has misconstrued and misinterpreted what is the public sphere to the point where, to use a retail term, it was kind of a gratuitous shrink and shatter of the public space and public sphere. So I was offended by it. I thought, you know, what's going on here? I'm sure that there are conflicting interests, but I think that the way they've conceptualized it is a misunderstanding. Of course there are conflicting interests, but the way they've construed it, the gentleman said that people feel a sense of ownership over a right-of-way. I'm sure they feel it, but I'm sure the Koch brothers feel a sense of ownership over all kinds of things. You know, but it's not the way to think about it. And I assume the city council, at least from what I've heard, the city council could take fairly simple actions. The lady said this is a fairly simple process. I beg to differ. It's not a simple process. Franz Kafka couldn't understand the process, frankly. I mean, it's way out of control, in my opinion. And the veto issue, to me, again, it's a gratuitous shrinking of the public sphere and, frankly, a shameful that they, you know, it's your job to not let the Bureau of Transportation people get away with thinking of things in that way. So you have a stewardship responsibility. They have a stewardship responsibility. And frankly, the Southwest Trails people, I'm sure you shouldn't just let them do anything they want. But the gentleman said some people think, why should there be a process? Well, yeah, I almost thought, why should we waste public resources when, to me, it's obvious there's a bunch of people older than I am who are pillars of the community and who have corporate sponsors, probably should let them do more or less what they want to do with some oversight. Absolutely. But I think the base issue about the presentation of the BOT is it's insulting to the Southwest Trails people, the way they say, oh, the public has chimed in, this, that. I thought their tone is off. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
My name is Elizabeth Morantz. I live in the Arnold Creek neighborhood in Southwest Portland. Our neighborhood is really lacking in pedestrian connectivity and pedestrian safety. All our major connecting roads pretty much have no sidewalks, and some are very dangerous to walk on. There is very little possibility of getting some sidewalks in on some crucial connections in the foreseeable future, like on Southwest 35th, which connects Jackson Middle School to Stevenson School and is a major connector in our neighborhood. The smaller streets, which also often don't have sidewalks, are safer to walk on. But a lot of them do not connect because of our topography and natural streams that come through. What this means is that in Arnold Creek, you pretty much have to drive to go to Tryon Creek Park, Mary Carver Park, Jackson, Wilson, you know, New Seasons even. So if there's any opportunity to get some better connectivity and safety in our neighborhood, I would encourage the council to pursue those avenues, and trails clearly is a very important one. Wherever there's an opportunity on public property to put in a trail, I would like the city to pursue that. And I would just like to say, for somebody like me who has a profound hearing loss, the fact that I can look up there and see some closed captioning helps me be an active participant in these civic affairs. That's a pretty high-tech thing. Putting in a trail is not a high-tech thing, you know, as long as environmental things are taken care of, and, you know, it's a pretty old-fashioned kind of technology, and I don't understand the opposition from the Bureau of Transportation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all. I'm going to ask people to try to hold their testimony to 2 minutes because we're going to have a time problem this morning. We have another fairly significant issue on the morning calendar and another one on the afternoon's calendar, and at some point we're going to give the council a break. It's